At 0800 hours, prisoner Murphy,
through carelessness on his part, was found dead in vent shaft 17. He seems to have been sucked into a ventilator. Prisoners Boggs and Rains are missing. There seems to be a good chance that they have met with foul play at the hands of prisoner Golic. We need to organize and send out a search party. I can only hope we are able to all pull together over the next few days until the rescue team arrive for Lieutenant Ripley.
It's here. You got Clemens.
Stop this raving at once.
I'm telling you. It's here.
Welcome to the Three Men and a Retrospective Podcast, Alien Retrospective Series.
Is this going to be a stand-up fight, sir, or another bug hunt?
Join Garrett.
Check it out. I am the ultimate badass.
Yes,
state of the badass art. You do not want to fuck with me.
Matt.
I work for the company, but don't let that fool you. I'm really an okay guy.
And Adam.
You've been in my life so long. I can't remember anything else.
As they go to another system and investigate the popular horror science fiction series where no one can hear you scream.
This is so nuts. I mean, listen to what you're saying. It's paranoid delusion. It's really sad.
From the 1979 original.
Take a look at this, man.
All the way through Alien Romulus, this newest installment coming out this year.
Did IQs just drop sharply while I was away?
The boys will examine each film individually and find out what the company's real intentions are.
Looks like love at first sight to me.
So strap yourselves in, podcast listeners.
Stand by.
The Percolated Media Alien Retrospective begins now.
Let's go!
Alien Covenant, released May 19th, 2017. Budget on this was $111 million. Box office, $240.9 million. And this is once again directed by Sir Ridley Scott. How did we get here, boys? Prometheus is released. Gets middling to mixed reviews. It does pretty well box office wise. We're kind of on the bubble about whether or not we're going to get another one. And here comes Ridley Scott to do this one. Matt, did you expect Ridley Scott to come back?
I wasn't expecting a follow-up, really, to Prometheus at all. I thought it was just going to be one of those things where they made it just to say that they did it to kind of test the waters. And then I thought Alien was going to be put out to pasture, never to be seen again. Little did I know that 5 years later, which the fact that it took this long also surprises me, and the fact that they called it Alien colon blank also surprised me, not calling it Prometheus 2 Re-entry or some other title.
Yeah, adding the alien to this was something that, I don't know, there are some things about this movie that we'll get to that there had to be a lot of things that were added just because they were like, look, Ridley, we're done with listening to your you and your philosophy type narratives. We're going to do another alien film. We're going to add an alien to the title. And we'll get to all that as we get into the movie. But what's interesting about the lead up to this, though, is the movie's out for a couple years, and then suddenly on Twitter, all of a sudden, a guy by the name of Leo Blomkamp, who we haven't heard from in the U.S. in a while, but at this time, he was a pretty well-respected writer, director. He had done District 9, which got a lot of Oscar buzz. He released some pictures of a concept he was doing based on kind of an Alien 5, where he was going to do the Bryan Singer route, where he was going to do a movie with Ripley, and it was going to have Hicks in it as well, to completely take out Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection and go with that. And he had a huge fan in Sigourney Weaver, who loved the concepts, and she said that she would make that movie in a heartbeat. Now, Adam, when these pictures are released, what are you thinking? Are you thinking we're going to get an Alien 5 here with Sigourney Weaver?
I thought somebody was angling for a job, and I felt like so many times that I had said, hey, remember how many times we were going to get the Wolverine, and that was going to be, I felt like somebody was going online to try to sell the job to the studio that wasn't giving it to them. I like the idea of Neil Blomkamp doing it, but other than the pictures being like, ooh, that's kind of cool, but when you see what they were with Ripley and everything else, I was like, okay, you know, you kind of want to go off in your own completely distinct, different vision. I don't like midquels. I don't like sequels that ignore the stuff that came after it. You get to tell what you want and ignore what you want. And I think that's lazy, and I think that's just arrogant as hell from a storyteller and filmmaker. Just wait till we get into some other movies later on. So I wasn't jazzed as much as I adore District 9. But hey, we still are going to get District 10 one day, right? Right? I just thought it was just social media masturbatory work on his end.
Matt, what'd you think about those concepts?
I was scrolling through Twitter that day, or at least some platform, and I said, what fan or website avid artist was looking to get a job at 20th Century Fox? And then I saw it came from Neil Blomkamp's brain, and my inclination went exactly to what Adam indicated. I thought he was pining for a job, which makes sense if you've seen Elysium and Chappie. You know who Neil Blomkamp reminds me of? He's the new Richard Kelly, where he came on the scene with one movie that took everyone by storm, and then he followed it up with two stinkers, and we're like, oh, maybe he's a one-hit wonder, and I don't think we've seen him ever since. I'm in agreement with Adam as well. I hate ignoring sequels that have come before. I'm always more impressed with how you play the yes-and game versus the no-but, which kind of ties back into our previous conversation about Star Wars. I was also not enthusiastic of the idea because it sounded like he was just going to remake Aliens. If you listen or do any digging into what the movie is actually going to be about, I don't like Alien 3 as much as, well, nobody hates that movie more than David Fincher. I'm somewhere in the top 10 probably. But I don't think the solution would have been acting like it never happened and just making a new movie set in between, which the marketing for next week's movie also spoiled. They're basically doing the same thing. Just, they're not pretending movies didn't happen, but they're doing the mid-quel type of thing, which, I'm trying to think, what was the first, like, I guess Sumer Returns would have been the first time. No, it would have been Halloween H2O.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
I think that's what started the whole thing of, oh, we're going to pretend the bad movies don't matter, which, I'm sorry, there are fans of any movie that's out there. And I think you're directly, for lack of a better word, pissing on them by saying those movies don't matter. Because you know what? At the end of the day, film can matter to somebody, even if you think it's awful. So I hate that concept every time it's done.
Yeah, I'm the same exact way. I kind of refuted those when they were out because I was working in the industry. And at that time, a lot of my friends were really for it. And they were posting them all the time. And we would hear Sigourney Weaver's comments on them and how much she liked them. And that narrative went away relatively quickly. You know, it was out for a couple of weeks. People were talking about it. And then it wasn't. And then we hear that Ridley Scott is indeed going to be working on the new Alien. He's going to be working on the new sequel to Prometheus, I guess we could say. And the first script is written by the writer of one of Adam's favorite movies, Transcendence.
Jesus God.
Jack Paglen did a first script of this. And then it was rewritten by Michael Green, who is a writer of Logan and Blade Runner 2049. And then, of course, a whole other rewrite is done by one of Matt's favorite writers, John Logan. Now, you previewed your thoughts of this last week, Matt, but when you hear this thing is being done by John Logan and Ridley Scott is indeed coming back, no more Leo Blomkamp, that's over and done with. What are you thinking?
Sounded like just a mishmash of ideas to where I felt like the studio, just by calling it Alien, was doing a bit of course correction. They're like, oh, the reason why Prometheus didn't make as much money as we thought it would is because we didn't have the word Alien in the title. So let's slap Alien on. We'll get Ridley Scott back because, look, he also needed some PR points after Exodus, Gods and Kings. Not only was an Astonishing Dad movie, but there was all the whitewashing controversy associated with it. So it was him kind of playing it safe. And then John Logan is the more prominent David Goyer, where I think he's only as good as the people he's associating with. I think he's done some good scripts, i.e. See, his best scripts are the ones where he's just adapting stuff. I mean, he took the songbook from Sweeney Todd and just brought it to screen. Kind of hard to fuck that up. Coriolanus is adapting Shakespeare almost verbatim. And Skyfall, I attribute more of that to Purvis and Wade, to be perfectly honest. So the fact that he was doing this movie as a rewrite, basically coming in and basically scrapping almost everything Dante Harper wrote, I was pretty worried. And science fiction and John Logan don't go well together because we'll talk aplenty about Star Trek Nemesis when we get to it. Which, by the way, this movie has some Star Trek TNG vibes to it, if you know the series. I'm not going to say if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
All right. Adam, all the Neil Blomkamp stuff is scrapped. We're getting this one. What were you thinking when you heard, oh, Ridley Scott's back at the helm? Never mind, Neil.
I was happy that Ridley was coming back, Sir Ridley, because I wanted a Prometheus sequel. I'm one of the few. So when he was coming back, I was like, sweet, you know what? Instead of going with an alien movie, we're going to get more of that. Yeah, I mean, Prometheus is really the only film in this series up to that point that ended on a cliffhanger of sorts, where it's like, hey, this does lead into the next one. It seemed like a natural extension. And as we discussed, I felt like Ridley was really working some stuff out that he had philosophically of what he wanted to tell and explore. So I was excited. And then it was hard to avoid that Fox was basically saying, you make this an alien movie or we're not giving you money. And it was clear from the get-go. And once that happened, my nose kind of turned. And then when the first, I don't know if it was the first or the last trailer came out, that spoiled basically what this movie was, I soured more than milk squirting out of an android.
Speaking of the trailer, I am also in agreement with Adam. I don't know what trailer it was, and I don't remember what movie I saw that the trailer played in front of. I'm sitting there, I knew this movie was coming out, and I'm like, okay, this does look like a sequel to Prometheus to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got to the last scene with the shower. And I turned to my friend and said, so Alien has officially gone full circle. It has gone from being a pioneer in the horror genre to a cheap imitation, being a slasher movie, which Alien has its own DNA embedded in that genre to a certain degree. When I saw that, I'm like, okay, this reeks of 20th Century Fox mandating that this has to be more of a splatter horror film than something intellectual like Prometheus tried to be. Didn't always succeed, but that movie had a lot more aspirations than just gore and showing us the alien over and over, which the trailers also did. I mean, there are so many money shots of the aliens in that trailer, it might as well have been funded by Pornhub.
Jesus. You know, I got the feeling, and we'll get into it as we get into the film, but I got the feeling that this wasn't necessarily a studio mandate as much as it was Ridley Scott saying, look, I can make Aliens too. But we'll talk about that as I give specific examples. But speaking of the movie's release, so the movie comes out May of 2017. I went and saw it. I saw it twice. We were doing a series on it at the other place we were at the time. And you know what? I noticed when I was watching it for this podcast that those were the only two times I had seen the film. I have the Blu-ray, but I never even opened it. This was my first time revisiting it. And you know what? When I came out of it, I thought it was okay. I was always a staunch defender of Prometheus. But when it came to this one, it came out and I was like, eh, it was fine. But nothing really setting the world on fire in 2017 was full of just good to great franchise films. And this was kind of in the middle for me. Matt, what did you think when you went and saw this in theaters?
I don't remember. I'm pretty sure I got neuralized after I saw this movie in the theater, because when I sat down to watch this, it felt like a first-time viewing. I saw it though only that one time, and I didn't see it exclusively that day. I waited a week. I didn't go opening weekend for whatever reason, and I saw it back-to-back with Pirates 5, because I wanted to see that first, even though I wasn't the most hopeful. And I thought it'd be fun to do a double feature of two franchises that should have ended after a certain point and have just kept going to see which one would spin her out for. I do think, though, that the release date is partially why the movie underperformed. Not just the fact that it's in May, but you're slapping it in between Guardians 2, in between Wonder Woman, Pirates. It kind of got lost in the competition. I wonder if they waited closer to October, maybe this might have done a little bit better. You could have paired it with another Michael Fassbender movie that opened in October, The Snowman.
Jesus Christ. All right, let's get to the real reason we're here. Now, Adam, you previewed this last week. The movie's released in theaters. For some reason, you decided to take your wife. And you said it was a pretty monstrously bad theatrical experience. What were you thinking when you came out of Alien Covenant?
Okay, so as I got close to it, I was excited to see an alien movie in theater again. I mean, just because, you know what, I was turned that it was going to go more towards an Aliens route. But you know what? I hadn't seen a Xenomorph movie in theaters in, what, at that point, 20 years? So, you know what? I'm still going to go see it. The trailers looked beautiful. It did look like it was shot, same Prometheus style. So, other than the final trailer, which showed and gave us the Xenomorph, like, full screen, and that pissed me off as a spoiler moment, I was still excited to go see this. So, in the theater, there is 5 or 6 people. And this is week 2, waited, not the first weekend. After about 30 minutes in the theater, and I'm sitting in the back two-thirds, center, as I do, think of that episode in Big Bang Theory where Sheldon's finding his perfect spot. That's me in a movie theater. Dude in the bottom left decides he's going to pull out his laptop.
Oh, shit.
There's a dude that pulls out a laptop and is working on something while this movie is going on. And he's in front of me. And he's in front of me, so I can't really avoid it. And at that point, I get up to, I can't remember if it was go to the bathroom or refill my icy. And this was probably about halfway, maybe two-thirds of the way through the movie. And for the last while, I'd been hearing this weird sound. My local AMC isn't wonderful about its speaker system. I've filed complaints over and over and over. I've written IMAX directly to complain about this one that doesn't get checked out anymore like they're required to. God, I miss THX. But there's this weird sound, and I can't figure out what it is. So I'm walking down the stairs to go refill, I think, my icy, and I realize it's a gentleman with his head fully back in his seat, just snoring his fucking ass off in the middle of this movie theater, in the middle of this screen. And his wife, and this dude's probably, I don't know, mid-60s. His wife is sitting right next to him, oblivious that she, this dude's just ass out to the world. And I mean, this entire experience, like, the theater experience was horrible. The audience was just horrible. And it just compounded everything that I felt about this fucking movie. It was one of the worst theater-going experiences I've had in my life.
So the theatrical experience colored your thoughts on the entire movie. In your mind, because you had told us for years leading up to this that you were never going to watch this movie again. Was it just because of the PTSD associated with the theatrical experience, or did you just not like the movie?
So there's once we get to Marvel, we're going to discuss films and things. I'll get into it here. I kind of look at this movie like I do the most recent iteration of Fantastic Four.
Oof.
There's exactly. There's a spot where I'm like, right on. I'm kind of getting what I'm getting. Where the fuck did this movie just go? And it was not just my theatrical experience, because I've had some bad ones. I could appreciate what I had and just be mad at the audience. That audience was an exact just cacophony of what this movie was as well. I have used the C word to describe this movie so many times that Billy Butcher would induct me to the boys. He would be so proud. No, my thoughts on this movie, I wish I would have brought a laptop to ignore what I was watching up on screen, or that I could have fallen asleep.
I just can't believe this is the movie someone would fall asleep watching, because it's so loud.
It is. Yeah.
I'm not even talking about like pacing or any of the storytelling, just the sound work alone and the noises. I would not be able to fall asleep during this movie.
Well, one of my best friends is a visual effects artist in that industry, and he had actually worked on this film. Now, this is a guy who had worked on the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films, the Matrix sequels. He did a lot of work leading up to this, and he was telling me how much he was loving working for Ridley Scott, and it was a kind of a dream of his to do this. And I didn't have the heart to tell him or his wife, I didn't think it was that great. And the visual effects were a kind of a reason why. But anyway, so let's get into this. We get the once again blue-tinted 20th Century Fox logo and fanfare as we get a close-up of David's eye, and he tells Waylon that he feels alive. All right, so let's go over this right now. Given where this movie goes, it really turns out to be a showcase for Fassbender. And given that he's essentially going to be playing two characters, I think he is tremendous in this movie. It is definitely a Fassbender showcase, even more so than last week.
I feel about him the way I feel in almost everything he's ever done, where he's better than the material. And I do feel like this is a showcase because he is giving two different types of performances, which is equally impressive considering he's playing an android. Also taken aback by the fact that Guy Pearce was here. I didn't think they would get him back, and I'm grateful they didn't feel the need to put him in that pancake batter makeup from the previous movie. If he looked like this and was just dying of cancer or something in Prometheus, it would not have been as off-putting. But this whole sequence, I thought, was more in line with Prometheus than I thought this movie was ever going to be. Thematically, it touches on a lot of stuff about creation and certainly fatherhood and gods, which is more in line with what Prometheus was focusing on with its creator versus creation and exploration. So I dig this opening a lot.
I feel like this movie opens with a deleted scene that belongs on the Prometheus Blu-ray. I understand this opening. I get it. I feel this is completely disjointed from the movie that starts as soon as this scene ends. It's awkward that way. I think it's great to see Guy Pearce. This is how he should have been used last time for Fassbender. Fassbender is an amazing actor, but you know what Fassbender does? The more that I, and maybe it's because I've watched a lot in recent times. I've seen him a lot. Fassbender does Fassbender. He's amazing, but I'm seeing Michael Fassbender. And when Michael Fassbender does a robot, I know I'm watching Michael Fassbender do a robot, and I'm not seeing a lot of differentiation between it. I mean, I feel like I'm seeing Magneto, and I love the guy, but I think this is the time where he was in so many things, and even with Quentin, I feel like I'm still getting Michael Fassbender. And it's a shame because I loved what he got last week, but I don't know. I think this is when it's just, I don't even want to say it's two Fassbenders too many or one Fassbender too many. I think it's two too many.
Wow, interesting.
The only knock I will give is his Walter voice sounds like Benedict Cumberbatch when he first started playing Doctor Strange. It's that cliched voice. It's that British guy trying to sound American, but cliched middle-aged white suburban American dad.
It's Hugh Laurie in the first few episodes of House, not in season two.
Yeah, it was before he perfected it. It sounds like I had expected them to reveal that his modulator was all fucked up.
Wayland tells him that he's his father, Darth Vader style. And I'll give the scene this. I like the back and forth between Pierce and Fassbender and the quiet nature of the scene. The footsteps echoing being the only sound that emits from this place. I think that's pretty well done. With the exception of their voices, and we also have the sounds of their voices and David's piano playing. Scott's really playing up the quietness of this scene, which I like.
Enjoy it because
it's not. No, you're absolutely right. This would have been, well, I would have fallen asleep like that guy did, Adam.
I think it's a complete miscalculation to open the film with this. I was aware that there was a lot of online material that came out before this movie, and I avoided all of it. In fact, most of it I had never seen until I watched it for this. And there's a opening scene, I can't remember what it's called, but it's like a final drink or final meal, something like that. If it would have opened this film with that and then slid this in 4 minutes into the film and then introduced David right afterward, I think it would have been a good way to go. But it doesn't matter. It's weird.
I would make the argument that this movie needs that scene. This movie does need what you're talking about, Adam, because we get a real intro to the crew that we're going to talk about here in a bit, including a huge actor in that role. Well, not a huge actor, but a pretty prominent person in that role, in an important role that goes away as soon as we see him in this cut. And we could have used a huge introduction, but instead we get this scene. I don't know if he had to make a choice between whether to use that scene or this, but I think you're right. I think this should have been the extra. So David asks Wayland if he created David, who created him? And of course, we don't get a straight answer. Wayland then tells David that they will find the answer together. David then says something that makes Wayland show a hint of resentment. He says the big difference between him and Wayland is that he will die and David will not. And I do like how the title forms here. You know, we're getting an already better musical score this time because we're getting hints of the Jerry Goldsmith score from that first Alien film. So I will say I really do like the compositions here. Adam, did you notice the score?
Yeah, I noticed it. I think it's fine because they ripped out of the good stuff that came before.
Mm-hmm. We see the outside of the Covenant ship as we're getting a similar text rundown that we have seen in all these films. And then Walter, also played by Fassbender, is being told by Mother to recharge the energy grid. Walter's weird because he doesn't follow the alphabet that they were doing, the subsequent alphabet with the other androids. Walter, they named him after Walter Hill, which, okay, I get, but why would you go away from that? Why don't you just call this guy Eric?
Well, if you named him Eric, then the Magneto comparison would have been too much.
Okay.
That would have been. But to your point, it's weird that this movie is very nitpicky with what it chooses to reinvent versus recycle. And that's a big problem I have. Even with the opening, I'm like, yeah, this is cool, but I've seen this title reveal in a previous installment, and I've heard these compositions to a certain extent beforehand. So at least I can see Prometheus, a large part of it. I felt like I was experiencing something new. I feel like in this one, I'm really starting to see a divide between a sequel to Prometheus and a new installment, like a reboot of Alien.
If anything, using the word Walter, using the name Walter, it should not bug me as much as it does, but I can't get over it. He should be Elijah. That would make sense with the religious allegories that is here when it wants to be and the not when it's not. To do it for no reason, okay, it's a little thing. I get it, but you take an expectation of fans that you've always done, and then you're like, nah, we're not going to. Why not? Just because. Okay. if you're going to do that, then don't have it be the same fucking character playing the android. That just makes it even worse, because he should be the next model.
One thing I'm not going to fault in this movie, though, is the visual style. I think it looks great. I think the ships look great.
One, the ship looks beautiful. They do a smart job of walking us through the ship. We've talked about this before in previous films. You get the layout of the ship by walking through it. Wonderful decision. This thing is shot, much like Prometheus, beautifully. For whatever you want to say about Sir Ridley, man, can he shoot a fucking image. It is beautiful. But I am going to say right now, if Mother's in complete control and is this amazing AI. I mean, we've already gone from father back to mother. And okay, thanks, Fox. Why do we have to have the android running stuff? Why do we have to have somebody pushing buttons when you have an AI just telling it, hey, go push a button? Why can't the AI do that?
Yeah, I question the entire purpose of having an android. This feels like one of those things, well, it's what this franchise is accustomed to, so we have to include it out of, just like, check the box. And why not, Adam, to your point, that's the mission statement of this entire movie. When shit happens, it's just, why not? And nobody said the first part of just why.
Nobody said the last part either.
Yeah, nobody said not either.
Well, something tells me that Fassbender was contractually obligated to do this, because you're right. It really doesn't need an android.
Fox must have pulled some deal that they pulled on Eddie Murphy when he was working for Paramount, because...
Walter is doing a crew check and is then told that a neutrino burst was detected, and emergency protocol is given. This wakes everyone up, and in contrast to the dining scene that we're normally accustomed to in order to introduce characters, we are starting pretty hectic here. So hectic, in fact, that we see James Franco completely burst into flame before he even gets started. And this was the character I was talking about just a few minutes ago, where in that scene that was released on YouTube, we got to see a little bit of the camaraderie between this crew. And I think we needed that, because once this happens, who gives a shit?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because other than three crew members, everybody here is interchangeable. This is background actors just giving some lines other than Tennessee and Walter and our lead, which we'll talk about in a minute. Everybody's just background, so it's a weird way to go this way. You're one person you knew of, and I'll say it's a surprise. I sure as hell was not expecting to blink and you miss him. Make sure that you go to the bathroom before the credits start or you're going to miss Franco.
Definitely.
But I was making the schedule. I totally forgot that I scheduled two movies this year involving science fiction where James Franco is in the second movie through a recording or through a screen. And I think he has more lines by default in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes than he does in this. I find the casting in this movie just tremendously distracting for a lot of it. And this one in particular, it almost plays like a comedic beat because he's so out of place when you have to put in the context, oh, this guy's the captain?
Mm-hmm.
Who died and allowed this to happen?
It should have maybe, well, we'll talk about Billy Crudup here in a bit. We cut to Daniels, played by Catherine Waterston, sulking in front of an active ship-induced painting, as well as some pictures and heirlooms, including a necklace. This is an actress we've talked about before when we did Fantastic Beasts. She's also been in mid-90s, and she was also in a big Fassbender film, Steve Jobs, which was a pretty big film at the time. I think she's fine here. I think it's pretty obvious. I think in looking at Catherine Waterston here, and this is not a knock on her, but she really seems like the result of the studio saying, you know what? Noomi was not right for the Ripley type role, so we got to go a different place and get somebody who looks more like her. Because I think Noomi was contractually set to be in this film. She is in this a little bit. We'll talk about it later, about as much as James Franco is. But I could have done with maybe a continuation with having her here. Adam, did that throw you off? And what do you think of Catherine Waterston in this role?
I knew in advance, so I wasn't thrown off by it. I'll say, watching some of the behind the scenes right before we're doing this, man, I have an idea that I think really would have worked with Noomi. I do. But being that I like Catherine Waterston, and I kind of knew the type of dynamic I thought she would bring to the role, I like her. But I like her in almost everything she does. So I'm a little biased that way. I know she's a little more mousy than some of the female characters we get in Alien movie, especially for a lead. And it's amazing, because that flips on a dime in the last freaking 15% of this film. But I think she does good. But I think what she's given is so kind of all over the place, you know, as well, because that character is just giving just chopped up shit that she's got to deal with from the beginning to the end.
I'll take it one step further. I hate this character entirely, and I use the word character very loosely, because what do we know about her beyond, oh, her husband died and she wants to build a cabin on the water, water stand, if you will. We know nothing. And more importantly, this reeks of 20th Century Fox not knowing how to differentiate these movies and being like, well, the last time these movies were successful, we had Ellen Ripley, so let's make a Ripley clone before Ripley clone and Alien Resurrection. This reeks of poor studio thinking and a overall lack of creativity.
So we meet Orem, played by Billy Crudup, and he says that this is their crew now, and they need a leader. So Orem addresses the crew and says that he is going to try his best to live up to the role of captain. And as I look at this crew, I can't help but ask the same question I'm sure we're going to be asking when we eventually get to reviewing the Halloween series. What the hell is Danny McBride doing here? Although, you know, it should be said that before he became the comedic actor that he was. He did go through film school. He did have ideas for horror scripts. He was a huge horror fan growing up. So I do see it in that way. It's just funny that after we've been conditioned to see him in comedic roles for so long that we're seeing Danny McBride in an Alien film.
It threw me off in the trailer. Yeah. Because Aliens, there's some really funny bits in that movie, to be sure. But I didn't want this to fall into the trend a lot of franchises have done, where you have a character there who's just purely for comic relief. And thankfully, he's not. I think, in a lot of ways, he's one of the bigger surprises in the movie. But to the Billy Crudup of it all, I would have just axed the Catherine Waterston character entirely and just focused on Billy Crudup, because his religious thoughts, that's very much a continuation of what we saw with Shaw in the first movie. Mm-hmm. So you had that thematic through line that could have been a lot more fleshed out if he wasn't fighting for screen time with her for most of this movie.
I mean, Billy Crudup, I find it hard to not like him. Going all the way back to Almost Famous, I mean, that's just a seminal movie for me, and even in Watchmen. But I find him superfluous here. I find him annoying. I find him so dour, and he's the one, actually, I want removed from this film. Because as much as, yeah, he continues on the ideas that Shaw had, he does it in just a fucking Eeyore, oh, woe was me type of way, just going through this film. What is Danny McBride doing here? I guess much like Halloween, he's getting this film made. I don't know what pull he's got, but, I mean, he is helping get films made, and I think he actually saves the scenes that he's in, and I can't believe I'm saying that, but he's one of the few joys to watch in this film. He's not annoying. He actually brings a character to it, and, yeah, I enjoy him, and I'm not a Danny McBride fan in a lot of things, though I wish he would have brought the other Franco brother with him into this, the one that's actually enjoyable to watch, but I'm surprised how much I enjoyed Danny McBride, and I think he's used sparingly in the right way.
Well, they couldn't bring in Dave Franco because he's not tall enough to get on the ship.
Yeah, I was surprised at how straight Danny McBride was here, and even more surprising was how much I liked him here. I'm with you, Adam. I like how straight he's playing it, and I like that I actually do enjoy this character. So we hear that the ship is holding at 83%, and Walter says that it was a random stellar flare that destroyed the portion of the ship, and Orm adds, despite them losing 47 colonists and one captain, it was time to report the ship and get going.
This premise of them was purely a colonization mission, because they mentioned they also have 1,100 embryos. Yeah. I know exactly how this movie's going to end by you setting up this premise. I think this is a cool idea that I guess the planet has gotten so polluted, we're trying to colonize somewhere else, trying to think a few steps ahead. But I guess in that time, humanity's IQ has dropped collectively, because goddamn, the crew in this movie makes the Prometheus researchers look like Einstein.
They are all slasher fodder.
It's only been 10 years since Prometheus, and we were on Earth at the beginning of Prometheus, but suddenly we have to go colonize other planets.
Yeah, and as they know, that Prometheus expedition did not go well. They never came back.
We're getting a mini tour of the ship, armed with X-Files flashlights, and Daniels tells Walter that this wasn't her idea. She says that they were going to start a new life, and now she's wondering why bother. Walter says, because you were planning on building a log cabin on the lake. They launch Branson's pod into space, and Orm tells Karen that them disobeying him means that they don't trust him. She says when they get to where they are going, the people on the ship won't be your crew anymore, they will be your neighbors.
Why is he so pissed off about her blasting her dead husband into space?
I don't know.
The way the characters interact with each other, they operate on the logic of a cheap slasher film.
I thought cheap slasher a lot while watching this.
Everyone's overly confrontational. They make questionable decisions at the best end of the spectrum. We'll talk about the worst end as this movie goes on. And the only reason there's this many people is so you can stack a body count.
Yeah.
Because Prometheus is what? 6, 7 people? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This one, we got a bunch of married couples, which is, that's tying into Noah's Ark. If you want to read into that, all the married couples. I mean, there's a lot of Old Testament in this movie. Emphasis on old and tired, much like the guy sleeping in Adam's theater.
But this supposed contentiousness between Orm and the crew, it doesn't go anywhere. There's no resolution. It doesn't play into anything. I don't know. It's just this dopey, droopy moodiness that I don't understand why it's here.
You include this to lead to a scene where he has his big hero moment where the crew trusts in him, and instead we get what we get. So that setup is never paid off.
Yeah, he either needs to put the crew over his faith or his faith over the crew, one or the other, and there's nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, It's incomplete. This movie, a lot of times, it's like turning the page in the script, and the next page is totally blank, except for like a Mad Libs prompt where you have to put in the verb or the noun or the adjective.
Well, it feels like a version of Alien 3 where David Fincher was turning the pages and saying, wait a minute, this wasn't here yesterday. It feels disjointed all over the place. Tennessee Ferris is out in space working on the ship, and he gets it to power up. He then starts getting interference and asks if they saw what he did, and he figures it's just the we talking and heads back toward the ship. This was only the real time when I was just like, okay, there's a Danny McBride I know.
Yeah, I'm sure there was some improv here from time to time, but also, I always hate in science fiction movies, this is not exclusive to this movie, when you have people in spacesuits working on the outside of the ship without being covered.
I hate that too.
Thank you.
The exact same thing while watching this.
I half expect Sandra Bullock to walk around the screen and be like, are you guys that stupid? Which, spoiler alert, they are.
Can you please watch Gravity before you go do a spacewalk?
More static and interference as they ask Mother for answers, and Tennessee hears a rendition of John Denver's Take Me Home.
Which is code for you spin that ship around.
Yeah, you go
way.
The other direction.
Because you keep going, you wind up in Deliverance.
I don't know what it is about this 18-month period of time in cinema, but I swear this was in four different movies.
I think,
Well, it was. It was this, it was Logan Lucky. I'd have to think about the other two, but yeah, it was like all in 2017. Mm-hmm.
Mother says that the signal originated from Sector 87, which is planet 4 of 5. They head down to take a closer look at Orem's orders, and Daniels asks if they should be abandoning the original mission in the name of going somewhere that they have no idea of its contents or the danger that lurks there.
No, they should not.
They should have changed her name to Spock, because this is the only time she says anything logical. When she looks at a point blank and said, we don't know what the fuck is out there. And for the record, they were woken up early, and they definitely don't have enough supplies to last 7 weeks, let alone 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they're all so gung-ho about doing this and are as receptive as they are, you all kind of deserve your fate. I'm sorry.
They set up to land as they get in the pod, and then they launch. They're heading into the storm and the deep horizons of the planet. And man, this landing scene is pretty. Again, Adam, to your point, it does look nice as it's going on.
Yeah, I never thought of it.
I saw it in Prometheus.
Yeah, right.
That's exactly. Like, when I'm watching it for this one, I'm thinking, we get the opening of Prometheus. We assume that it's Earth. That planet could be this one because it looks just like that planet from the opening of Prometheus. But it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It made me laugh. This one line might be the best line in the film because they're getting ready and they look and go, has anybody ever done a drop-in before? And I'm like, yes, we've seen it in every film.
Yeah, right.
I feel like that's such a cute little nod to those that have watched all the Alien films. I'm like, hey, guess what? We're doing the lander drop once again. So just self-acknowledging what we're about to go through.
They head into the planet, and then they walk through wheat fields, and they're going through search of their ghost. I like the wheat
fields.
You gotta back the fuck up.
Hang on. And I bet we both got the same notes here. I don't know why when there's a piece of land right there, you decide to land your lander on the water strip, but okay. And then your scientists and colonists are going to grab your weapons, but they are not going to grab a suit or a helmet in this brand new planet that they've never been on before. You deserve to take two steps out of that lander and drop dead credits, let's go home.
That would have been amazing if this movie was like a bait and switch, like Scream, where they all die, and then we cut to an expedition going to rescue them, because Prometheus, at least you could say, the defenders can say, they were on that planet with suits, deduced the air was breathable, and took that chance. These people do no semblance of research into this atmosphere, and instead of putting on helmets, they put on the Kyle Broflovsky South Park hats, so they all match and walk outside. I'm like, you guys are the equivalent of the hipsters I see at Starbucks. If this is the people who are going to colonize the future, we're doomed.
They roam around a bit, and Walter tells Daniels that this is a nice place for a log cabin. Daniels wonders who planted the wheat fields as they continue walking.
This is like my problem with The Walking Dead, who keeps cutting the grass.
But I like this, though. I like the fact that we're getting a different look for this. I'll give it that.
Okay, obviously I'm commenting about how stupid everybody is and the problems I have with the crew. I am with the movie up to this point for what it's giving me, however. And part of it is because I think it looks beautiful. I'm getting something different. We're moving at a good pace at this point. And I'm intrigued because I don't know what we're going to get. everybody is stupid as all hell, but I'm involved here and I'm actually bought in. I laugh when we get the normal, hey, where's that signal coming from? 8 miles that way. God damn it. Then why'd you park here? And how many times are we going to discuss this?
Oh, God. Yeah, they walk 8 miles in record time, no water.
Fly over that area where the signal's coming from before you land, at least. Mm-hmm. Especially being that when we see where they go here in a little bit, how did you not see that on the fly-in?
Ledward stays back with Karen as they take samples, and the group determined that the signal was coming from somewhere that's higher than they are. You know what, Matt, I want to go back to what you said a few minutes ago about Noah's Ark. We're not having individuals here. These are all couples. Is this just to add to the body count, or why are they all coupled up here?
I wish the movie gave me a better explanation. Mm-hmm. I think this is one of the things that would have been explored in some kind of prologue where we actually saw the genesis of this mission. And we know there's a good 30 minutes of this movie that was cut. Scott's even reported that. So I'm convinced there was more to this expedition and colonization ship than what is displayed here. As it is, it's bare bones, and it shouldn't be, considering the, pardon the pun, the gravity of what they're doing.
The thing is, too, you get these couples together. They're all different, quote-unquote, specialties, and I use that word extremely loosely. But it seems like they're only here just to then split up the couples. Because almost none of them are together. You get the, oh, be careful with my wife, but it's almost just so that every time something happens to one person, it affects somebody else.
Well, yeah, this movie also has the dumb trope of people splitting up when there is no logical reason to.
Definitely.
Hey, this brand new planet we got to, we're just going to stop right here and take samples. You guys go on ahead. This is the stupidest of slasher movies.
This makes The Lost World look like... Look like a documentary.
Meanwhile, the ship is having a harder time tracking the team due to the storm dissipating the signal.
Again, we just saw this in Prometheus. Yep.
We see Ledward leave to take a leak and step on something fierce as he blows smoke that if I were still doing drugs, I would love to experience. And we see something move up into his system.
So, if you have been in hypersleep for the last, I don't know, 4, 5, 7, 8, 11, however many years it is, you're probably not going to have a nicotine addiction anymore.
Wow, we're going that deep.
You have beats. Yeah, it is absolutely idiotic. I mean, this is B-movie slasher bullshit that a dude's going to walk off to take a leak and smoke a cigarette. It is that stupid. Now, I love stepping on the spore and seeing that stuff released, though. I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool, because I do think we are seeing the evolution of something different, and I think this is neat. I'm a little more bugged with what feels like sentient vapor completely going in his ear, but I think it's a neat thing to have these spores all over.
I like the look. I wish we didn't see the spore enter his ear and go through his system, because it would have been more of like a what the fuck thing when he starts spazzing out. The movie plays its hand way too much. For a franchise that has been very good about building tension and suspense, there's none of that in this movie. Mm-hmm.
They then discover some kind of vehicle. They move inside and more of the plants are ingested. We see Ledward fall forward as the crew concludes whatever drove the ship they're in, they had to be giants. We're hearing the name Prometheus being mentioned as the two go over how that ship disappeared 10 years ago, as Daniels concludes that this isn't a Wayland ship, and she picks up a photo of Shaw and Charlie. There's your check, not Tom Hardy from last week.
And Noomi.
Noomi comes up later, too.
How is it that you're walking through the woods, and it's not till they're standing under the horseshoe ship that they're like, hey, there's a ship right. You're standing under it. No shit, this is ship. Yeah. It's like, what the hell? Man. It's stupid. Stupid.
At this point, I'm laughing at the movie, and I'm not with it, because this is the most beautiful schlock I have seen in a very long time, funded by a major studio.
Definitely. The crew on the ship, meanwhile, they find their source, that of an alien singing Take Me Home, or at least that's what they think it is. We see Ledward struggle to walk, and Karen radios back to say that they're headed back to Lander. Hallett falls as the signal back to the ship breaks up. Ledward vomits up black goo as he gets on the pod and on the medical table. They open him up as his back spurts blood, and Tennessee makes the mistake of telling a woman to calm down. You never tell a woman to calm down. The door is shut as Ledward convulses and spurts an alien. Now, this alien is a different kind of alien. It's called a neomorph. It's coming from the back. And you know what? I like that they did different stuff with the aliens. I mean, I'm not just saying this is because Spencer worked on this, but I like the look of these. I think they look cool.
I like the look of the Neomorphs. I have a problem with the different aliens we get, with the amount of different aliens we get, and I don't have a problem with these ones here because of the first ones we're introduced to. Now, I do have a problem with the size and dexterity and everything else that this thing has. The gestation period that we've kind of joked about a little bit through five films might be the most all over the place and the most worst example of I don't give a flip about it than has been done in this entire series. What I want to give credit to is the one smart person, obviously on the ship of Covenant, because when she realized what's going on, even with the other crew member in there, she backs out, shuts the door, and locks them both in. She's just like, yep. Nope, you're both screwed. So at least one person is wise for now. She's about to pay for that in a little bit. But I do think it's an amazing scene with watching it. Not when it bursts out and that body folds in half. It's just hell of a moment. But I'm bothered by how big and, I don't know, it's like Alien 3 when we have the dog, you know, and suddenly we get almost a full-size thing. The size of that thing could have not been in that body. And we have something that he ingested those spores like, what, an hour ago, 2 hours ago. So it's just all over the place. It's hard to follow that.
Yeah, by this point, I've thrown my hands up in the air and said, I don't know when it comes to the cycle and the continuity. Yeah. I don't mind the different designs because, quite frankly, it's the most imaginative stuff in the movie. Yeah. I think they look great in static shots. But whenever it has to move really erratically, it looks like the Roadrunner.
Yeah, the actions and way that it moves just do not make sense for what we've seen. Even though we're getting a different version of it, it's really awkward to watch it move.
That's what she said.
The one other thing that bugs me so much is these spores. I mean, the first one, dude steps on it when he's taking a smoke. The other dude who got the spores in his face, there's a bunch of people over there. When you step on spores, but they only infect one person, again, I don't understand how they make some of the decisions they're making in this movie. But I guess it's just one more stupid thing. I guess I should stop that tally.
Well, they went into their inventory, pulled out the green herb, and applied it. So they treated their wounds.
Karen is shut in with it as they don't want the virus to spread, and she kicks the alien away before it attacks. Maggie slips as she tries shooting it and then makes her way out. The alien bursts through the glass and Maggie shoots some fuel tanks in order to kill it, but she ends up destroying the entire pod. But you know what? I gotta say, as dumb as that is, and yeah, that is pretty dumb, this is an intense scene, man. I'm with this scene more than you guys are, I think. I think this is a pretty intense, pretty suspenseful scene.
You completely missed that she walks in there with a shotgun. That is a dead to rights and slips on a...
No, I said that. I said she slips as she tries shooting it.
Okay.
No, I said that.
It was just a fun little comedic moment. But it is a frantic, frantic scene. I get it. It is intense and a little harrowing.
Yes, it is. But it's immediately ruined as soon as she pulls that trigger. Because not only does she slip and fall, she misses with a shotgun at point-blank range. The thing is directly jumping at her. She misses and then shoots the fuel tank. And then they cut to a wide shot of the ship being blown out, and I burst out laughing in the movie theater like the Joker. I could not stop laughing, because this movie's like Vertigo. The stupidity just keeps increasing as it goes.
Matt, I would love to see how you would respond if there was an alien like this right in your face, and you had to keep your gun still in order to shoot it. If I place myself inside this, I can see why she would not be able to get a straight shot in.
Well, it's one of those things to where she had two chances and failed both times. And the fact that she slipped, that's a cute comedic beat, but that also alleviates some of the tension. It ramps back up, but I don't know who this movie's for. I don't know if it's trying to be high art or if it's trying to be fast food.
And speaking of Halloween, every time I see somebody slip on blood, I think of Halloween 2 every single time. Meanwhile, Hallett is having similar attacks as another alien hatches and makes his way through the fields. Tennessee says that he's going to fly through the storm, but he stopped from doing so due to the hurricane-laden conditions. Daniels is having problems getting in contact with Covenant as the alien attacks yet again. A flare is shot, and the alien is taken out as Luke Skywalker shows up in a robe and says, follow me.
I'm with you if you want to live.
If this was Oct 2, and this is how they reintroduced Luke, that'd be pretty badass.
Yeah.
If instead of like a Fassbender, Mark Hamill was underneath that hood, I'm sure the acting quality would have gone down, but hearing Mark Hamill say, I'll do the fingering, would have been the funniest thing in a movie all year. But this is, like, I was thinking of, like, Beats. I'm like, this is the, when the kid shows up in Jurassic Park 3 with the smoke grenades, where I'm like, wow, you are really lucky that David happened to be close by.
Which means he had to be watching all of this, because he didn't come in running. No.
No, because nobody knows how to run properly in this movie.
He takes them through more corpses and toward an installation of some sort as he puts his weapons down and reveals himself to be David.
With the world's worst wig since
then. That's a pretty bad wig. Yeah.
Did this wig come from Fantastic? Did they take this off Kate Mara's head?
It might have, because this room is the map room from Game of Thrones.
That's the table.
He goes over what happened during and since Prometheus, and then he goes over what the virus was meant for, and he walks by Walter saying, "Welcome, brother." Walter says that he will talk to David, brother to brother. They're still having a hard time getting in contact with the Covenant ship, and Tennessee is trying to bring the ship within 80 kilometers of the expedition. David sings Monte Carlo and cuts his hair, so we have the quintessential cutting of the hair scene that Matt loves so much.
Yeah, with the dirtiest mirror and a lousy pair of scissors, he gives himself an amazing haircut.
And dye job. And why would an android grow hair? Like, what? In fact, he's been there for 10 years. What's inside it? Does he have a 3D printer that lets him grow this hair? Does his fingernails grow? Does he got to trim his little David down below? Like, what the hell is going on? Why does he grow hair? That make no sense other than this Ozymandias moment that we get ripped off of Watchmen here in a few minutes.
Yeah, which is made even worse by having Billy Crudup in the movie.
Right?
Way to call attention to it.
I've never had a real issue with the hair and things because the way I look at it, since Call, I think the androids have been updated to the point where they have human conditions like this. So I didn't really have an issue with that.
Oh, of all the things in this movie to nitpick, that's
no, there's a lot more, you're right. We get a conversation between the two brothers, which contains a flute lesson, and David says that he was with Wayland when he died. They go over some philosophical stuff about being too human and scaring humans, but I do like this conversation, and again, I'm going to say I think Fassbender plays it beautifully. Adam, I'm going to guess that you didn't really like this.
I don't, and I know I'm supposed to, and as I said before, I usually love Fassbender in a lot of things. Not only do I think the writing is poor, I'm not digging Fassbender in here. I know he's doing two different accents, but when he's Walter, I don't think he's able to keep that accent consistent, and I think maybe that may be an issue with filming and reshoots and stuff like that. And it's hard to nitpick because he's doing both sides, but you know what? I'm not the one who took the job. But I can't stand watching these two together. You want to talk about just a masturbatory movie and scene, the whole... Hold it. I'll do the fingering. I mean, there's no better representation of this film than frickin' that right there. I fucking can't stand it.
Wow. Matt, be the tiebreaker.
Well, there's also no better instance of clashing of messaging with this scene, considering the last 30 minutes that we've seen. All of these parts that are meant to echo or tie into Prometheus feel so disjointed because the rest of the movie has nothing on its mind besides making beautiful art out of garbage. And I also think the dialogue is really bad in the scene, and in particular, the insertion, trying to do the parent trap thing, the seams show in this scene compared to some other movies. The Social Network does this really well. I can see the insert shots when it's the two of them together. And part of that is also the fact that they don't look different enough, so you can't 100% get around that. But yeah, I'm with Adam. I was happy to see Fassbender in the movie, and then this scene came up, and I'm like, wow, I guarantee you someone thought this was the For Your Consideration clip. And the accent is really getting on my nerves here.
I'm still getting over the fact that you complimented a Fincher movie. Orem tells Daniels that she was right about this place, as they've lost 5 more crew members and they never should have come. Daniels says they need his faith. Now we get a flashback to what happened as Black Ooze is dispensed and all these engineers are destroyed. Just a weirdly filmed and chaotic scene here. So we're under the impression that David flew here and then instead of landing, he takes these things out with a flyover, I guess?
Yeah, it's like a giant carpet.
Yeah. Bomb.
It's just infuriating that all the purposeful ambiguity in Prometheus, which certain people gave a pass to, ultimately leads to nothing.
Yeah, this is the literal result of people saying, I didn't get any answers. I didn't get any answers. What actually happened? Well, now you're getting answers, and now it's not exactly a good answer now, is it? So you shouldn't have really asked. David says that he was badly injured, and Shaw put him back together. And then he goes over how much he loved her, just as much as Walter loves Daniels. So they're making a good comparison of David and Shaw and Walter and Daniels, and I didn't really see that.
That is not foreshadowed or inferred whatsoever in any of the prior scenes. Which makes me believe all the David scenes, I guarantee you, were written by somebody else. Or these are the John Logan inserts.
Yeah, don't forget, this went through about 6 or 7 different hands before it finally went on screen, so...
Once he's introduced, this movie lacks any real cohesion outside of visuals.
This is the moment I'm talking about. So, all right, Fan 4 stick. We go to Planet Zero, and it's a different movie from that point on. As soon as David shows up here in the exact same Dr. Jomachev outfit hood that we get in Fan 4 stick, it is a different movie for the entire rest of this film. It spins on a dime, and it's like somebody else wrote it, directed it. I don't know. This thing is just so incohesive.
Feels like it was written by the writer of Transcendence, actually. We're seeing a neomorph moving through the fields as it kills Rosenthal. Tennessee is getting word that there were more casualties on the mission, but Mother is preventing them from going down.
We're doing the AI being evil again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait till we get to the end.
But this, I feel like this movie was made to all the people who claimed that Prometheus was too different.
Exactly.
To me, this is the worst kind of franchise course correcting. Because you're also, by doing that, deluding yourself. This is like the Coke Zero of Alien.
Yeah, you're following fan response. You're not following organic storytelling. And we saw this when we did, as much as these two movies I'm going to mention is not exactly in the quality, Alien vs. Predator, Aliens vs. Predator Requiem. The only reason you did Requiem was in response to people, ooh, it wasn't violent enough. It was PG-13. And I have a feeling when we get to Romulus next week, we're going to probably get the same thing where, oh, it's got to be more violent. It's got to be an alien. We got to have facehuggers. We got to get all the violence in that we can. I get it. You need it. But this is forced correction, and it's terrible. I don't like when filmmakers go and try pleasing fans instead of actually try to tell an organic story.
These are the same people who complain that Superman doesn't punch anybody in Superman Returns.
God.
And that's why we got Man of Steel.
Oh my God. It's so frustrating.
I see that, because you asked about that scene with David dropping the bioweapon. But even that seems to suddenly make no sense, because you get this bioweapon. We saw what that weapon did in Prometheus, but when he drops it here on this entire temple, we don't get Xenomorph, we don't get aliens jumping out. We don't suddenly have a planet overrun by these things. They just kind of die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just wipes them out like a plague. Yeah.
But we're told that it does this, but it does that. Okay, I get it. You know, as it drops out of the ship, oh, look, it's a double helix. It's, oh, man. You had an idea, and suddenly you backed yourself into a corner, and you're like, I guess we better explain this. Oh, I guess we better explain this. And it's so unsatisfying.
And in the previous movie, it opened with it creating life. Albeit through death. It's the circle of life type of component. This, now it's just a bioweapon. So I have to infer that David did some modifications to it, but this is also one of the problems Prometheus established, where we don't know the full capabilities of what the black shit does.
Orym leaves the team in order to think, as we see a neomorph stand up and stand to David, and Orym takes aim and shoots it.
His freaking thing standing up! Okay, you know what? One of the best things I could say, I liked how these characters looked in New Mutants when they were the giant smile creatures. Oh. That's exactly what this looks like.
Looks like Hollows from Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
Oh, shit, you're right. Oh, it does. Oh, this movie could use an Eva Green.
David promises to show Orym reasons to keep the aliens alive. We cut back to the ship as it gets closer, and Tennessee gets word that Maggie is dead. We see David tell Orym that the aliens are the result of his experimenting and releasing pathogens in order to create new life forms. David leads Orym to eggs, saying that they are waiting for Mother. One opens up, and as Orym examines it, he is attacked by a facehugger.
Because when the sinister guy takes you down into his basement and tells you to put his face in something, you do it. But now, the room beforehand, the examination room, whatever you want to call it, that is a beautiful set design. I love the stuff on the walls. I love seeing the evolution of what he was doing there. I can't stand the way they did it, and I really think it's a poor decision to have David doing it. I think you have a very interesting movie if you have the science officer survived and is stranded for 10 years and is using David to experiment, and the xenomorphs are what come out of it.
Or the big reveal is Shaw is still alive and is actually the main architect who has thrown faith out the window and gone full into Dr. Moreau syndrome.
I wouldn't have bought that.
But I love the room. I love the designs. I feel like I'm looking at Giger's
sketchbooks
here up on the walls. And I do think that is wonderful. I know they did a book of David's drawings, and I wish they could have stayed in that room a little bit longer. Make this a set piece where things happen, because, oh, God, this is good.
I agree.
But and it's a shame that it's over so quick.
Yeah, and I couldn't stop laughing. He might as well have said, hey, I got candy in my basement.
You want to come downstairs in my popsicle?
Tennessee is told by Daniels to launch now. David tells Orym that he believes in creation as an alien hatches from Orym's chest, and David just stands and smiles.
Oh, no, it gets worse in a couple seconds.
We see Walter discover the decomposed corpse of Shaw as the Prometheus theme plays in the background because of it being done on a flute by David. David says he was not made to serve, which is why he released the pathogen. He says they don't deserve to start again, and he won't let them, even though they created the two of them. So David is the villain of the story.
Yeah, because we have never seen an android go insane and try to murder the protagonist in an alien movie.
Well, if they're going to play up to that, I don't have a real issue with that. I just have an issue with how it's done.
I don't have an issue with that. I do have an issue with the xenomorph, as we know it, being a creation of David.
Yes, me too.
I do have a big problem with that. It is no longer a perfect organism. It is no longer an evolutionary marvel that's on the absolute horror scale. To make it David's creation is utter bullshit.
This is why you don't make prequels about shit that doesn't need to be explained.
Adam, I am completely with you on that. I don't have a problem with the android doing what we have seen the android do before. To me, that's continuity. I don't mind that. What I do mind, I'm exactly with you. This beautiful, elegant creature that we saw in that first film, the way it just kind of hung out and hid within pipes and attacked when it needed to attack, is the creation of this character is fucking mind-boggling, and I hate the fact that they went there with it.
I would not have a problem if it was the result of when he dropped the black ooze. If what happened was the 10 years that have gone on since, these things evolved, destroyed him and Shaw, and it was a result of his hubris. But to take away the perfect organism evolution that was kind of there from the get-go, you removed it. And you removed it for just, a slight against God because somebody's in a pissy mood when he wrote that part of the script.
Walter says he doesn't only dream of David, he doesn't dream at all. And David kisses.
So
he dreams of electric sheep. Sorry, man. So there is a lot of Blade Runner in this film.
The opening shot of the eye, that's straight out of Blade Runner. And speaking of Star Trek, the David-Walter scenes, it's Data and Lore. If you've watched The Next Generation.
Oh, that would have been funny. If he would have showed up with if he would have sported a goatee, that team showed up on planet.
Weird shot of these two androids kissing. The fact that this is Michael Fassbender kissing himself just weirds me out.
Like I don't even know what it's supposed to convey to us. I'm not upset that it's Michael Fassbender kissing Michael Fassbender. I just don't get what we're supposed to be getting from this scene. Mm-hmm.
You're just mad that you're not in the middle.
We see Daniels get inside the set of sketches that David made as Lope, here's another character, is attacked by another facehugger, and Cole cuts it off, and we're seeing what the acid blood does when it gets on you, and the alien attacks again. Man, this is brutal stuff.
At one moment, that freaking facehugger scurries away and hides behind a wall for a moment before coming back out.
Yeah.
Stupid shit. Well, now that the neomorphs, they operate on the same level, they might as well be critters.
Jesus.
Like, you have removed this series, seems like the one that's gone on, the more they have emasculated the xenomorph.
Yeah. Meanwhile, David tells Daniels that he's going to do to her what he did to Shaw. He attacks her before Walter comes to her aid. The fight wages on as Daniels runs away. This fight between Walter and David, wow.
Yeah, and I talked about the movie playing its hand. As soon as they cut, I'm like, all right, David killed Walter. Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, yeah, it's obvious.
And it's instantaneous.
Uh-huh.
And it ties back to Prometheus, was the, you can do it, you just have to not mind it hurts so much, you know, putting out the flame. And it's just continuation with him cutting off his hand. But this fight, the way that it's just Hulk Hogan lack of freaking talent with these two fighting each other here in this room, it's like, no, this fight is bad. It's like watching the end of the second rebooted Star Trek film when we get that fight freaking on that ship with Cumberbatch and Kirk. This is how that feels.
Unnecessary.
Just club.
Unnecessary Hulk Hogan low blow right there, by the way.
Hulk Hogan gave plenty of low blows during his WCW run. More importantly, I was thinking of this is shot with the choreography from Star Trek Generations when you have three guys in their 60s having a fist fight. And I'm sitting there going, okay, who's going to break a hip first? Here, it's so poorly choreographed, and I don't know how you can take this movie seriously from here on out. It's just, really, Scott has lost his fucking mind. I think this movie, along with a lot of recent movies he's made, has shown that he has lost his touch. I also think this is what happens when you make movies every year.
I'm not going to say he's lost his touch. What I will say is I think this movie is just poorly advised because, Matt, you've been one to say from the get-go that really Scott didn't really make good films to begin with. He makes beautiful imagery, and we've mentioned that throughout the course of these last two films, but he's never been able to do films like this with a real consistent level.
His best work was pre-Gladiator. All of his best movies, I think, are before he kind of hit the mainstream and started doing more prestige pictures. I also don't think he's not the right person. This movie reminds me a lot of Hannibal, with the absurdity.
Except
this movie is nowhere near as... I think Hannibal's a lot more fun. Because I don't think that movie makes any pretense about trying to be thoughtful. This one still is trying to put on that facade, and I don't think it works at all. Especially, like, you can't have a movie with all this biblical shit and then do the Cain and Abel fight, which is what this is, and shine a light on it and say, ha-ha, you know what this is? For God's sake, did Darren Aronofsky direct this movie with all this biblical nonsense?
The fight wages on as Daniels runs away. Daniels finds Lope, and they prepare to board the ship. Tennessee heads to the surface as the crew run to the ship, and Walter says that David has expired. Oh, God, it was so shocking when we learned that this isn't actually Walter.
Nah, it's like when Ted DiBiase switched to Ebner Brothers.
Well, that was actually effective in my eyes. This was less effective than that. I mean, the ending of this, oh, we're going to get to it. I'm going to save it till we get there. They board, and the fully grown xenomorph attacks as the burners are turned on. Daniels is still on the surface of the ship as the alien climbs on the window and starts headbutting its way in. And Adam, I'm assuming this was the shot from the trailer where you're like, oh, God.
I just couldn't believe they showed it. This is a reveal. And hey, I'll say it. You get the Xeno that people were complaining about. This is as close as you get to that classic Xenomorph style. It's black. It's the big dickhead. It's what most people think of. It's still weird the way that it moves. And at one point, there's that giant claw arm that Watterson, like, that moves as slow as the frickin' claw machine at Chuck E. Cheese, but somehow it captures this Roadrunner jumping around Xenomorph. But hey, we have an action scene.
This is a John Peters note. You need an action beat every 10 pages.
The alien is caught in the tractor claw as Daniels is swinging right into it, and Tennessee has to once again pull the ship up. Walter leads Daniels off the ship's wing as it finally takes off. They start patching Lope up as Daniels goes to whom she thinks is Walter. She thanks him for saving her life, and he says that it's his duty as we pan from a photograph of the full crew.
Okay, here's the thing. If she was as close to Walter as this movie pretends, she should have known this was not Walter.
Of course. Yeah.
By making that clear, you retroactively make this even dumber and make her look even more incompetent.
Make her look very incompetent, I agree.
Yeah, and I do think it is some previous version of the script where there was something about not only does an android dream of electric sheep, does it fall in love with Daniels? Because there was something there that was excised, but a line was left in, and it just confuses the rest of this.
Tennessee says that he took Mother offline, and Daniels tells him he better call her captain from now on. We pan further in as Daniels is summoned to the med bay, as there is an unidentified life form on the ship.
What the hell is Mother doing being like, hey, Daniels, there's an unidentified life form. Go get it.
What the shit?
She sees another dead body, and for some reason, we get a shower love scene right in the tail end of this movie.
The worst acting in this film is not only Jesse Smollett trying to kiss a naked woman in a shower.
And of course, it is interrupted slasher style, and what a death scene we get here. But my question to you boys is this character really dead, or did Jesse Smollett cut the alien a check and make it look like he was dead?
I'm going to say... He said that it was two big black MAGA hat wearing aliens that attacked him.
I've been holding on to that joke for 3 weeks now.
I'm going to cross off that in my notes because I wrote down something.
God damn it.
I'll say, I know a lot of people have issues with the shower scene. I don't mind it. I actually like that it's here. A couple reasons. One, this has turned into a full-blown stupid B-movie slasher. Give me some nudity and blood. It does both in the shower scene. I like seeing the little head go out the big head. I like this death. It's quick. It's over. I'm happy to see this kind of just gratuitous violence if you're going to go this slasher schlock.
It does feel very Studio Note-ish, though, if you look at it in that way. Because this has no business being here.
What? On a spaceship, how are you wasting this much water?
Yeah, right?
Especially when we know supplies are not equipped to last.
Exactly.
If they woke up
Now, Matt, you and I, we went through the whole Friday the 13th series. We saw a lot of scenes like this, didn't we?
Yeah, I like this better in Jason
X. Daniel's in Tennessee. They're making their way through the hull and find the result of the shower from hell. They keep going through the ship, closing all the doors behind them. The alien is behind them, and David is hearing what the plan is. He opens the airlock. The alien approaches again as she traps it. Tennessee has to release a second truck, which makes the alien go into the deep reaches of space. Now, Adam, much like you, I've heard a lot of complaints about, oh, you sit back in space again. But I like this. I like the way this escalates. I like the way this ends. I think this is a pretty good way of dispatching your alien.
I don't disagree with you. It's at least a little bit different. I think it's weird that it's ejected out into space and then somehow, like Carrie Fisher, force jumps its way back into the ship, but that's okay. I do feel like they did a little bit of a nod to Alien 3 by closing the different doors throughout the ship to corral the alien into this bay. I felt like that was a throwback there to Fincher. Yeah, this final scene, hey, it was set up earlier. I knew we were going to come back here in this bay of these things with the equipment. I don't mind it. The final few shots are really bad CGI. You know, they are with those spikes coming out from behind Daniels. But it's a little different. I think it's okay. I think it plays kind of cool.
I kind of wanted the movie to be over. So anything that got me closer to a resolution, I was pleased with.
So you were okay with this alien being launched into space again?
By this point, I'm ambivalent to what this movie's doing. Gotcha. Michael Keaton should be in this movie because it's white noise.
Oh my God, the references you're pulling out today. Daniels in Tennessee see that the other's alive, and the ship moves further into space. Daniels puts Tennessee to sleep, as David leads her to sleep as well. He says that...
Before you have to mention, these people were deathly afraid of getting back in these pods, and now we're totally okay with it.
We're cool now, yeah. David says if they're kind, they'll be headed to a kind world. And then the moment Daniels realizes the robot is actually David is when she asks if he'll help her build a cabin on the lake when they get there. David asks Mother for some music as he makes his way to the life forms collected and adds a set of pathogens from his throat. He closes the drawer and walks further in, and as he does the final log sign-off, which we've seen in a few of these films, and credits roll on Alien Covenant. I'm going to say, boys, I don't mind the ending to this. I think this is terrifying when you realize what's happening and you see that this guy has control of you and you are trapped in this pod, even though, yes, we've been built up to the fact that these pods are not these people's favorite things, but I think this is terrifying. I think this is a good way to end this.
Good points. First, I forgot that we still have a couple dozen colonists here on this ship because the beginning of this film makes it feel like they're all dead. So I forgot till we get here. No, that's right. We got a lot of people. Even Alien 3 says this is one hell of a nihilistic ending.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with it. I do think it fit. I do think it's terrifying. I had no doubt when we saw the eggs at the beginning and I saw the way that it looked because it even looks like an alien one-sheet theatrical poster. So I kind of had a feeling how it was going to end and I was right and I'm okay with that. But yeah, it's a creepy, terrifying ending, though I don't know why putting him in there as opposed to just, I don't know, putting him in with the colonists, but whatever. It's a very down ending, but it kind of fits with this, what we watched.
And Matt's just happy it's ended.
Yes, this feels like a Ridley Scott inclusion because, let's not forget, this is the first Alien movie he made since his brother died. And I think he was kind of in a place where he was wrestling with that, and that kind of leads me to believe that that's why this ending is as nihilistic as it is.
Interesting theory. All right, boys, that does it for Alien Covenant. Scale of 1 to 10, what do we give Alien Covenant? Adam, you go ahead and go, sir.
I was really looking forward to how this movie was going to wrap up the themes, ideas, and questions that we got from Prometheus, especially being that after that film, Exodus notwithstanding, we got an amazing film out of Ridley Scott called The Martian. So it showed that he is still capable of some amazing things. And this film, he can point a camera amazingly well, but the rest of this thing is an utter tripe mess. This film is the black goo, and it is spread from opening of an eyeball to the closing of an embryo-laden case at the end of this thing. The characters are stupid. They're written stupid. They're acted really not well. They're forgettable, other than Tennessee's hat, I guess, really for the most part. The decisions that Ridley Scott made of how we got the Xenomorph are not only unfulfilling, they're anger-inducing. I don't know how anybody who has watched this entire series could get to this point and go, yeah, I like that idea. Yeah, sure, absolutely. I don't know how anybody who likes Aliens, even if they don't like 3 or 4, I don't know how anybody can like those first two films and like this one. I would love someone who does to explain that to me, because I think this is not only just unfulfilling in that way, I think it just rips Black Ooze on those first couple films, and those things are some of the most brilliant high points in sci-fi cinema. The CGI Xenos take me out of this film when they show up, for the most part. We went over it, but one of the two Fassbenders, fucking the puppet controlling a Xeno, was one of the stupidest things I've ever seen in my life. It's unfortunate how bad this movie is. I watched it for the second time ever. We got a decent discussion out of it. Yay! There's some good things to look at in this film. The shooting is, cinematography is done well. David's room of the drawings are beautiful to look at. Go watch the YouTube clips on this film of the stuff that was cut out, the separate stuff. That's at least more interesting than watching this film. I'm going to be gracious and give this a 3, and I think that's being very nice. I'm never going to watch this again, and that's with me even getting ready to go see Romulus. That's better than I thought I was going to give this film, but at least the conversation we had made this thing almost worth watching again.
He says almost. All right, Matt, what about you?
I've had colonoscopies that were more fun than this movie, and I've never had a colonoscopy before. This movie is, for something I was not anticipating or even excited for, it still disappointed me. Like, that's the crazy thing. I guess I should have known better. And it's crazy to me that we've seen this franchise devolve despite seeing the evolution of the alien itself. It has gone from being a trendsetter to a trend follower. It did what some of the Bond films did as things like Star Wars were coming out and Miami Vice, which we talked about years ago. I feel like Alien, with this film, was kind of doing the same thing where it was no longer the torchbearer. It was taking up the rear in the race. And I feel like this movie told me to take it up the ass multiple times and just deal with it, despite this movie being shockingly poor writing, dumb characters, and the intellect of an amoeba. I think this is the worst movie up to this point, if you discount EVP. If I'm talking about the movies in the official canon, I think this is the worst one. And I did not like Alien 3 whatsoever, but goddamn was this bad. There's some decent, I would even say above average cinematography, but there's no substance here. This movie's like a chocolate Easter bunny. It's hollow inside. And I found it sluggish to get through for a movie that really has no meat on the bones. So all those analogies to say this movie sucks, I feel like Adam. I went from having no recollection to just sitting there going, I guess this movie was so bad I purged it from my mind. Much like Adam, I'm never going to watch this again. I have no desire to ever revisit this. Lock me in a cryo chamber and make sure that I don't wake up if this is ever playing. If this is on in my hospital bed someday, pull the plug and call it a mercy killing. This is a 3 on 10 for me as well.
Wow, 2 threes. I don't remember the last time that happened. You know, as we'll discuss in a few minutes, I don't care how much I tell myself I won't be excited for a new Alien film. Every time one does come along, I cannot help myself. And this was no exception. You know, when I heard that they were going to do the Neil Blomkamp thing, I was like, okay, we'll see how that goes. But I'm not too excited about this guy trying to put himself out there as a new director and trying to sell himself. And then Ridley Scott came along and said, no, I'm doing my thing. And the more I heard about it when it was being done, the more I was just like, okay, I'm kind of excited. I build myself up. I go to theaters. In fact, this just came through my Facebook feed where I was getting memories of the build-up to this film, and I was getting excited, and I was posting posters of it, and I could not wait to see it. I just can't help myself with how much I love this franchise, and I sat down and I watched it. I thought it was average. I didn't think it was bad. Watching it for this, I kind of had the same feeling where I think it's just average. I think this is just a mix-up of a whole bunch of visions put into one so-so film. The Shaw stuff, it's just a crime that we didn't get more of what Shaw could have brought. I hate the fact that the studio was like, you know what, get rid of that Noomi Rapace, let's just replace her with this chick, and this chick just ends up being a brooding mess. No offense against Catherine Waterston, I think she does fine with the material she's given, but the problem is the material's not really up to what this character needs to do. I did like the look of the Neomorphs. I think it's really good to evolve the look of the alien itself, and the fact that we get those is pretty cool to me. I enjoy seeing them go on the rampage. My issue is a lot like what Adam mentioned earlier, is goddamn the fact that David created that beautiful xenomorph. I cannot believe that that's what they came up with. Now we are supposed to watch that movie and say that it came from this guy? No, it is not a beautiful life form. It is not just chaos. It is something that this guy made out of a test tube. All that being said, though, I'm not nearly as hard on it as you guys are. I think there's some scenes in this movie I do really like. I like the wheat fields. I like a lot of the kills that go on here. I think the intensity of this movie is higher than a lot of the intensity we've seen this entire series. So for that reason, I will give it the average score. I will give it a 5, but I'm not going to say I'm never going to see this again, but again, this movie came out in 2017. This is my first time watching it since then. So 5 out of 10 for me on Alien Covenant. But boys, as we speak, we are a few days away from the release of Alien Romulus. And again, I looked at this movie coming out. I was like, God damn, why are they fucking doing this? Why are they giving it to this fucking guy who did this Evil Dead remake that's so terrible? Why? But God damn, I'm a few days away from watching this movie. And I got to say, like I've been building up, I'm kind of looking forward to that. When this podcast ends up getting posted, it will be at least a month or so later. But as we build up to it, I'm looking forward to it. Matt, what are you feeling as we get closer to Romulus?
Look, I could not give two shits about this Romulus movie. If I was not being compensated for going to see this by doing a podcast, I have no desire. Call me a cynical asshole, but Fede Alvarez does nothing for me. I get the movie looks slick, but what we talked about with Covenant, this Romulus movie feels like a response to all the people who complain that these movies aren't scary enough. It's kind of the Halloween 2018 model, where we're taking it back to basics, because we kind of went off the rails. That logic is warranted to a certain degree with Alien. Look at those AVP movies, for goodness sake. But nothing about this screams ingenuity or real creative. Everything looks like Ben here done that just with some polish and buckets of blood, which this franchise has never felt the need to bathe itself in. So I hope it's good, but I'm not going to cross my fingers.
Adam, we're getting some pretty good buzz on it. What are you feeling as we get closer to Romulus?
You know, there's a really famous scene in The Fugitive. Tommy Lee Jones is on his knees. There's water pouring out. Harrison Ford is standing there. Tommy Lee Jones holds his hands up and goes, I don't care. I want to care. I do. But I don't. I'll say it. I haven't seen a single movie that Fede Alvarez has done. So maybe that's a point in my favor. But look at this cast. I don't care. Look at the other stuff. I don't care. To your point, yeah, the little bit that I've seen trailer-wise, and I really, really tried to avoid it when wife and I saw Deadpool Wolverine. They had a red band trailer, and at that point I wasn't in the mood to get up and move from my comfortable recliners, so I ended up seeing it. I don't want a blood-soaked slasher film, because that's not what these have ever been, but it feels like what this is going to be. I don't know. I want to get excited. I'm not excited for the film. I'm excited about one thing, and I said this when we did Apes recently, and I was really moved, but my father reached out to me the other day and said, hey, there's an Aliens movie. Let's go see it together. And we talked about how much that meant to me at the start of this series. So that alone is something special. And if it wasn't for that or this podcast, I'd wait. Because it's going to be on streaming. I'm glad it's getting good buzz because I hope it invigorates the franchise, but I hope it does it in a positive light. I wish I did not know the time setting it was done because finding out that it was a fucking midquel also just kicked me in the balls because guess what? I know the end because I know what comes after it, but I'm hopeful. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Maybe lowered expectations help me feel better about the movie at the end.
Well, no Fassbender, no real engineers that I have seen in any of the things I've seen leading up to this. But as the fan of this franchise, again, I will say if my excitement were on a scale of 1 to 10, I would probably be at about a 6 or 7. I just can't help it when it comes to these creatures and this franchise. I find myself really building myself up for it. But as Matt mentioned a couple weeks ago, you're setting yourself up to fail.
Yeah, every time that Xenomorph hikes up its skirt, you run to an ATM to go.
I sure do.
Enjoy yourself.
I sure do. I'll be the first to say it.
With this series obviously changing directions away from the philosophical to the horror realm, if somebody wants to see Ridley kind of finish his thoughts that I think he started with Prometheus, go watch Raised by Wolves.
Yeah.
Because he has time to kind of flesh those out a lot more.
Yeah, and by the way, he's not completely off. He is still on as a producer on this. So a lot of people said that he should have been that way with this film we just discussed today. All right, but until next week, when we get to the new release, Alien Romulus. When one note is off, it eventually destroys the whole podcast, David. Thank you, boys.
We better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Now what the fuck are we supposed to do?
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Brooke, I'm telling you, there's something moving and it ain't us.
And if you would be so kind, please take a moment and give us a positive review and rating on your podcast platform of choice.
Could kill him. I'm willing to take that chance. Just cut it off and then.
You take responsibility?
Yes, yes, I'll take the responsibility. Get him out of here.
It truly helps others find and discover our podcasts.
How far would you go to get what you came all this way for? Your answers.
Check out the Percolated Media Archives, as we have tons of franchise reviews, including Star Wars, the Mad Max movies, Avatar, movies featuring the team-up of Leonardo DiCaprio and Martin Scorsese, the film adaptations of author Stephen King, films of the DC Universe featuring Superman and Batman, Jurassic Park, and so many more.
Stop your grinning and drop your linen.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, Adam, and Nathan.
Oh, great. Wonderful. Shit.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
How are you, you stupid cat?
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
You started this. Show me everything. I can handle myself.
Yeah, I noticed.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men and a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
They ain't paying us enough for this, man.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes, and all clips, music, and audio cues are used as such.
Thank you, that will be all.
God damn it! That's not all! Because if one of those things gets down here, then that will be all. Then all this bullshit that you think is so important, you can just kiss all that goodbye!
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is a Percolated Media production. All rights reserved, and no copyright infringement is intended.
Commercial starship Nostromo. Third officer reporting. The other members of the crew. Kane, Lambert, Parker, Brett, Ash, and Captain Dallas are dead. Cargo and ship destroyed. I should reach the frontier in about 6 weeks. With a little luck, the network will pick me up. This is Ripley, last survivor of the Nostromo. signing off.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
The movie's released in theaters. For some reason, you decided to take your wife. And you said it was a pretty monstrously bad theatrical experience. What were you thinking when you came out of Alien Covenant?
Oh, you know, I gave you all the clues. All right, Matt put that snowball right on the tee. Okay, so...
Just the sound work alone and the noises, I would not be able to fall asleep during this movie. Granted, I've only fallen asleep once in a movie theater, and that honor goes to 10,000 BC. I have never had so much trouble staying awake watching a movie in the theater outside of after one of my kids was born, and I was just exhausted, and I couldn't even tell you what I was watching, but that one, like, I was wide awake, caffeinated, but goddamn, that might be one of the most boring movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think 25 years ago, Garrett had to keep nudging me awake during the Thin Red Line. But I'd been up for 30 hours at that point, and we were at a private screening with Terrence Malick. That was
different. That was much different.
Fox must have pulled some deal that they pulled on Eddie Murphy when he was working for Paramount, because they got him for 4 X-Men movies, they got him for 2 Alien movies, they got him for Assassin's Creed.
Oh, I forgot about Assassin's Creed. So Walter is doing a...
So did he. So did the audience.
I've actually never seen that film.
Oh, it's bad. If you want to watch, like, Great Talent Get Wasted, that's the movie for you. You get wasted watching.
Walter is doing a crew check.
Well, they couldn't bring in Dave Frager because he's not tall enough to get on the ship.
Let his wife play. She can.
Oh, act. God. No. His wife is a worse actress than James Franco.
Who is his wife?
Britt Robertson.
Who is it?
Allison
Brie.
Oh, God.
If you want to read into that, all the married couples. I mean, there's a lot of Old Testament in this movie. Emphasis on old, because a lot of this feels worn out and tired.
Can you say the last line again, because my phone went off? Say it one more time, because my phone went off.
Yeah, emphasis on old. That would have been amazing if this movie was like a bait and switch, like Scream, where they all die, and then we cut to an expedition. This movie's got enough fucking exposition.
And she picks up a photo of Shaw and Charlie. There's your check. What was the name of the guy from last week?
Holloway.
Okay, there's your... But what was his name? Do you remember?
Not Tom Hardy.
Okay, there's your check. Not Tom Hardy from last week. I think this is a pretty intense, pretty suspenseful scene.
I think this works.
Hang on.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I think you completely missed.
I gotta say, like, I've been building up. I'm kind of looking forward to that. When this podcast ends up getting posted, it will be at least a month or so later. But as we build up to it, I'm looking forward to it. Matt, what are you feeling as we get closer to Romulus?
Sorry, I fell asleep.
Well, shit! Fuck you!
I'm kidding. Okay. I felt like I was in cryo sleep ever since this movie. Look,